Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Christy. Welcome to What You Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. I told you this while we were off air, but this is my very first podcast recording for Under the Southern Sky. So I'm so excited.
I am so excited to be the first one to talk to you about the book. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am an author, obviously, of seven novels. Under the Southern Sky is, well, actually nine, I guess, but Under the Southern Sky is the seventh that has been released. And I am also one of the co-hosts and co-founders of Friends in Fiction, which is a weekly web show that I do with Mary Kay Andrews, Mary Alice Monroe, Patty Callahan Henry, and Kristen Harmel. So that's really fun. I have a nine-year-old little boy and a husband, and we live in coastal North Carolina, and that's where I get a lot of the inspiration for my stories. And I also have an interior design blog called Design Chic with my mom, Beth, and we blog 7 days a week about beautiful interiors and design and fun, inspirational things. And so if you read my books, I usually have taken a lot of the, like the rooms and the houses I'm describing are usually something from the blog. So that's kind of fun.
Oh my gosh, you're writing, your side hustle informs your main hustle. That's your exactly
main hustle, right. Your side hustle. Well, and do you know what's really funny is that the blog actually came like 5 years before the books. So we had Design Chic. I think we started in 2010 and my first book came out in 2015. So crazy world, but yeah, we're still doing it, still here. So it's been great.
So let's chat about the blogging. Like, yeah, when inspired you get started and why a design blog? You know, I love the setting and I love like you're so like descriptive about it and you feel like you're in a magazine.
Oh, like, thank you. Thank you. Well, it's so funny because every now and then my editor will be like, okay, that's too much. Like, we don't need all of that about that one room. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Back it up, back it up. Okay, I got it. Well, so it's actually a really funny story. So it was 2010, like I said, and my mom called me one day and was like, oh my gosh, I just read this article about how as you get older, you need to keep learning new things because it, you know, keeps your brain growing. And she's like, so I feel like I need like a new hobby or something where I'm like learning something. And I mean, I just remember laughing because my mom is one of those like really busy people. She's always doing a million things. She always has a, and I'm like, what are you going to possibly do? And she was like, I don't know. What are we going to do? And I was like, oh, there it is. Okay. So I said, do you know what, mom? We should start a blog. And she was like, great. What's a blog? And I was like, well, so I was doing some freelance writing at that time and I was writing for some other people's blogs. And, you know, 2010 was a really good time to get started. Like there were enough people in the blogosphere that people had heard of it. It was like a thing, but there weren't so many that it was like totally inundated. And so I said, you know, it's like a website. We can write about whatever we want. And she said, well, let's do that. And let's write about, decorating. And we were both redoing, sort of like historic houses at the time. And she was like, we can share our pictures with each other. And we never expected anyone to read this thing. We never expected for it to really go anywhere. And after about a year, we were finished redoing our houses. And we were like, this has grown. Like we have email subscribers and, you know, we advertisers are starting to contact us and things like that. And so we were like, well, let's just keep doing it. And we'll just keep doing it until, you know, it's no longer fun. And so I always laugh because mom, who did not know what a blog was, can write like HTML code and stuff now, which is amazing. And it really, it's been so great just to get to like explore something different, but also it's been so good for my books too, because I have this other audience who isn't necessarily reader based, but is kind of reader adjacent. You know, I think a lot of the audience overlaps. And so it's been great. It's been great.
So how's it like to work with your mom? My mom is actually coming to work for me for the podcast. She is. Yeah. Like I'm sort of going to train her. She's like, okay, I'm excited. And I'm like,
yes.
Oh, I'm excited about it because I need the help. And I'm like, you know, like this is like, I've got to talk to someone who has a mom and daughter duo.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. It was like fate that I came on here today then. Yeah. It's actually been so great. It really has. I think if I had done it with someone else, I couldn't have kept it going for this long because, you know, you can say things to your mom that you can't say to a regular business partner. Like, I just can't do that today. Like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm overwhelmed. I just can't deal with it. We're going to deal with it next week. And you can't really say that to someone else, but you can say it to your mom. And so I think that's really, and you can say like, or like they can say to you, you know, that's not really your best idea. Or like, I don't think you should have that guest. You know, you can say like a mom and daughter can say things to each other. I feel like that you can't say to just a regular business partner or like for in your situation, if you're like, that's not exactly how I wanted it done. You can kind of tell your mom that. Whereas when it's just some random person, you're like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings or, so, I mean, for us, it's been really great. And it has kept us connected. We live like 5 hours apart. Mm-hmm. So it gives us that connection where, you know, we're talking about it every single day. There's always something fun going on. There's always something that we're talking about. So it's been wonderful.
Oh, this is so exciting. Yeah, my mom lives in Puerto Rico and I live in Chicago. And so she...
Wow. So y'all are really far apart.
We're really far apart. And so she's retiring officially in July. So she's coming for an extended period of time in August. And I was like, okay. Like, she's like, I don't know what to do next. And I was like, you know, I actually have stats for you to do. So come work for me. So we're going to do an extended training of like, you know, the different tasks and different ideas. But yeah, that's like the plan is like, you know, to the audience, like my mom's going to come work for me.
That is so cool. I love it. Do you think she'll ever like be on the podcast with you or you think she'll just be behind the scenes?
I think she'll just be behind the scenes because she's not a reader. I try to get her to be a reader, but she's like not the whole reader focus. Although she actually has access to my Amazon account. So she has access to thousands of books that I've accumulated. So every so often I'm like, oh, you should pick this book. She's like, okay, let me give it a try.
And maybe when she has more time and she retires, she'll become more of a reader. But you know, you cannot force that on people. And I'm trying to force it on my son and it's not going well.
Yeah. I think it's like, it happens. Like I didn't come from a family of readers. So my grandmother was a reader. My parents were not, but I became a reader like early on, like sixth grade. And so I just like bench read like Sweet Valley High.
Oh my gosh, me too. I love Sweet Valley High. Oh my gosh. We could just have a whole podcast about Sweet Valley High. I mean, I'm such a fan. In fact, somebody asked me recently who my first literary crush was. And I said, oh gosh, now I forgot his name. Todd Wilkins. Todd Wilkins. Yes. Todd Wilkins.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was going to say Todd Wakefield. And I was like,
I think they're not married. Well, he ended up with Jessica. So, which is like kind of like a weird thing. I was like, I don't know how I feel about the whole Jessica
situation. No, that's right. Oh, maybe he's kind of a creeper. I should change that answer.
Oh my god. Yeah, so but we shall see. So thank you for the heads up and maybe I'll reach out to you. But I love the idea that I can be honest with her that I probably wouldn't be with other people. So
that's what I think. So I think it'll be good.
I love this. So let's talk about your writing process. Like when did you start writing your novels? Like what inspired to write? And what inspired to write within the women's fiction genre? Like what were some of the tidbits and you know, historical info.
So I got a degree in journalism in college and I had a master's in literature. So obviously writing was something that I was really passionate about and that I loved, but I always thought that I wanted to tell real people's stories. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think of myself as like a creative writer. I didn't really think of myself as a creative person, honestly. That just wasn't something that I thought I was that good at. I really thought my strength was in telling real people's stories. And so I was actually about to turn 25, which I look back, I'm like, wow, I was like a baby. But, you know, at the time I felt like, okay, 25, like this is a real age. I'm going to start like doing something. And I was working in a completely different field. I was working in finance, but I had this idea and I knew it was fiction. I knew it was a story and it felt long to me. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to try to write it. I'm going to see what happens. And I never thought I'd get published. I never really thought I would be an author, but I thought, you know, I have this story idea. Let's see if I can do it. And I can look back one day and say to my grandkids, like, I wrote this book one time and it's in this drawer and it never got published, but I'm really proud that I did that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I started writing, and I was just so shocked by the process and how things would just happen that I hadn't really expected, and how the characters would come to life on the page in these ways that I never could have imagined. And it was just such an interesting and cool and fun process that I knew I wanted to keep doing it. And so it was something like, it was almost like turning on a faucet. It was like, once I started writing, I kept getting ideas. Thankfully, that has not stopped yet. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote two, what I call my practice manuscripts, that are in a drawer somewhere. And I'm like, if these ever see the light of day, someone's in big trouble. But I started writing a book that I actually wrote before Dear Carolina, which was my debut. And I finished it and I really felt different about it. I thought, this is something I'm proud of. This is something that I would really like, you know, the world to see. And I started looking for a literary agent with that book. I signed with a literary agent, which was really exciting. And in the meantime, I had finished the first draft of Dear Carolina, and I submitted it to a writing contest, and it won. And an editor at Berkeley was one of the final round judges. And this was a very long story. This sounds very magical and like I snapped my fingers, and it was not. It was years and it took a long time. But she ended up buying the book out of the contest, and that's how I got my debut. So that was in 2015, and gosh, here I am, 7 books later.
Oh my gosh. You've been publishing a book a year.
I have been, and I'm actually, I actually have 2 coming out in 2021, which is really exciting. So Under the Southern Sky, and then Christmas in Peachtree Bluff is coming out October 26th. So during the pandemic, I just was getting so many letters from readers. And I have continued to get letters from readers not wanting Peachtree to be over, but especially during the pandemic, it was like, it just ramped up. People were like, we need to be safe. We want to go home. We want to be secure. Give us more Peachtree Bluff. And, you know, I wasn't on the road. I do a ton of touring when I have a book come out. I think in 2019, I did like 85 speaking engagements or something. So yeah. So a lot of my year was spent on the road. And when the pandemic hit, I was like, that's like half of what I do. So yeah, I could write 2 books this year, no problem. And so I went ahead and I called my editor and said, what do you think? And she was like, yes, let's do it. I love it. Who doesn't want to spend Christmas in Peachtree Bluff? Let's go.
Yes.
But it has been a book a year, since 2015. And then this year it'll be 2 books. I'm not sure I'll do 2 books again.
Well, I think you had extraordinary time. So some people could write, you know, in the pandemic, some people couldn't write in the pandemic. Yeah.
No, it's so true. So it's so true.
We were shut down, like, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it almost became like, I was writing the Christmas that I wasn't having, if that makes sense. Like, I wanted to be having this Christmas where we were doing all the normal things that we do, and we weren't having that. And so I was like, well, I'll just write it instead. And the writing for me is, I mean, I love it so much and it's so fun. But the promotion of the book, so much goes into that, you know, that people don't necessarily think of. And so those couple months before a launch, that's really my full-time job. Like, I'm not writing hardly at all. I'm really just prepping for the launch and the events and all that stuff. So, which is great. I mean, I love that part too, but I'm like, oh, I'm going to launch this book and then turn around and start launching the next one. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Like a breather, maybe summertime, you get a little breather.
Oh yeah. Summertime is my, like, I definitely take them. I'm like a tiny bit of a workaholic. It's bad. But in the summertime, I am not at all. I like really have a good time and relax and don't work nearly as much. Cause I want to be, you know, my son's 9 and mm-hmm. I'm like, how many more summers do I have with him at home? Not that many. So, mm-hmm. So I need to like really savor them. So we have a big time in the summer. It's fun.
There we go. Oh my gosh. And I love the peach trees coming back for a Christmas book. Like, I love that those books, like, you know, in the pandemic, I realized there was something to be said about going back to old classics or yep. old favorites and just yep. going back to authors that you just like to bring you comfort. And then, you know, realizing that, hey, like, we can still keep going. Author, you know, not only authors getting paid, but they're like, you know, we want this. We need these now.
I know. Well, and the funny thing is, so when people kept asking me for more Peachtree, I was like, I just feel like I'm done with the series. I don't really have anything else to say. And then I just got this idea and I was like, oh, I actually have a lot more to say. Well, then I finished writing the Christmas book and I was like, God, now I've got an idea for another Peachtree Bluff book. I don't know if I'll write it, but it's just funny how getting back into it made me like, oh, wait, I could talk about these women forever. It's like they're at a different point in their lives now. I think when I kept thinking to myself, I don't really have anything else to say, I really maybe didn't like in that year. But now that it's been 3 years, I'm like, oh, they're all in different places in their lives. Like a bunch of new stories have kind of opened up. So I was like, I have a lot to say, actually.
Amazing. Let's talk about Under the Southern Sky. What's the elevator pitch for Under the Southern Sky and like why we should pick it up?
Okay. I'm so excited about this book, first of all. Mm-hmm. I got the idea for it in like 2015, like when Dear Carolina was coming out. So this is a book that has been kind of in the back of my mind for a long, long time. But it's about a woman named Amelia, who's an investigative journalist. Mm-hmm. And she's working on a story and about what people do with their unused frozen embryos. And while she's working on that story, she inadvertently discovers that a cluster of embryos belonging to her childhood friend Parker and his late wife Greer have been deemed abandoned, which basically means that they're in storage somewhere, but no one is like paying for their storage. No one's really like actively responsible for them. Mm-hmm. And so she's then put in the position of having to tell Parker this, knowing that it's going to bring up a lot of emotions for him because his wife died 3 years earlier and he just has not moved on at all. He's just really sort of stuck in his life. So she tells Parker about these embryos and he's of course shocked because he has not even thought about them in his grief and has just assumed they're on some, you know, payment plan somewhere being drafted. And he realizes that, you know, it's been 3 years and he needs to decide what to do with these embryos. And, you know, they're the last remaining part of this woman that he loved so much. So, his journey to sort of decide that, and then Amelia's part in it also are really kind of the crux of the story. But the story is told from the perspective of Amelia, who's the journalist, and then Parker, her friend. And then we get to see Greer through her journal entries here and there, especially as they're related specifically like to the embryos and what they meant to her. And then we also get to hear from Amelia's mom, Elizabeth. She's a good Southern meddling mama, which I love writing those kinds of characters. So she was really fun to write. But each of the characters in this story, including Aunt Tilly, who's not a main viewpoint character, but who is my favorite, they all have, she's pretty fun. She's one of a kind. But they all have a secret. And as those secrets are unveiled throughout the story, what ultimately ends up happening to the embryos is also kind of dictated by all of those secrets and how they come together at the end. So anyway, like I said, I love the story. I cannot wait for people to read it April 20th. I've had such good feedback so far on it, which always makes you feel happy, you know, because you put this thing out there and you think, oh gosh, like, are people going to like it? Is this going to resonate with people? And I felt like it was a timely story. But I wanted everyone to love it as much as I did. So I hope they do.
I loved it. So I got a question. Like, did you, because you're writing multiple character point of view and the story goes, like, there's a flow with the story. How did you plot it out? Like, did you write one character at a time or did you or did you pants your way? You're like, really? Yeah. Like, you just unfolded and you're like, oh my gosh. Like,
so I, oh, sorry.
Yeah, go.
So I am like just a total pure pantser. Like I do not outline. There is no plotting for me at all whatsoever. And so to be completely honest with you, Elizabeth being a viewpoint character was a surprise for me. I knew going into the story, you know, I knew what the story was going to be vaguely, you know, I didn't have it planned out, but I kind of vaguely knew what was going to happen. Although I won't tell you on the podcast because it's a spoiler, but since you've read it, I'll tell you after. But there was one thing that, like a really major thing that I thought was going to happen in the book. And when I wrote it, it just didn't hit. Like I was like, that's not going to work. It just, there was like a little bit of this element to it that I just did not like. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have to rework this whole story because this is not going to work. And so when I was reworking that part and I'm telling this story and I was like, Elizabeth's voice just popped into my head, and that like her first chapter just popped in. She doesn't come in for about the first 60 pages or so, mm-hmm. which is sort of unusual for me. I normally like lay it out there at the very beginning, like here are our protagonists, here's what we're working with. But we really didn't need to hear from her until then. And then when we needed to hear from her, we needed to hear from her. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just, I don't know. It's just somehow when I sit down and I start working, the story just starts to flow and come together, but I don't always write it in chronological order. So a lot of times, I'm writing the pieces that I guess they're like the emotional hooks of the story, and the things that those are usually the pieces that come to me first. Like, where is the point in the story where that like it's going to hook a reader, or where a reader is going to feel something for this character? A lot of times those come to me first. But this one I did probably more than some others. I really did write this one fairly chronologically, and I do tons of editing. So I'm a really fast writer, but I'm a slow editor. So I'll get that first draft on paper like super fast. But then I really dig in the editing, and it really all kind of comes together during that point.
It makes sense that you're a fast writer for the first draft because you're pantsing away. Mm-hmm. So it's probably like a process of uncovering. You're like, you want to know what's next, what happens next, what happens next, what happens next. And then you're like, okay, we got something here.
That's so true. That's such a good description, because it's like when you're reading a book and you want to keep flipping the pages, it's like, I'm writing the book and I want to know what's going to happen next. Cause I don't always know. I'm like, okay, well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen next? What now? So you're absolutely right. It's like that discovery process, and oh, it's so fun. It's just so fun.
It's really fun as a reader. So I can imagine as a writer, it's like, it's just this process of just like unboxing.
Yeah, it's exactly, it's like a giant unboxing. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So I love this. So mm-hmm. Let's have some book recommendations. So what has been a book you read this past year that you recommend?
Okay, so I have to recommend Surviving Savannah by Patty Callahan. It's a historical fiction. It's about the sinking of the steamship Pulaski. That's kind of a tongue twister. I cannot say that three times fast. But the Pulaski is considered the Titanic of the South. And so it's this beautiful story. It's actually a contemporary historical novel, because as she was writing the story, they found the ship, which was crazy. So they found the ship while she was researching for the story. And so she ended up writing part like this contemporary storyline too, about sort of what they were finding as they were, you know, pulling up the pieces of the ship that remained. So it's a fascinating story. It's one that'll really stick with you. It's really great. Another one I loved was The Love Proof by Madeline Henry, and it's her second novel. So she's fairly new, and it was one I just flew through. It's a story about this really brilliant physicist who goes to college, and she meets this man, and she basically kind of like solves the equation of love and like what that means to us, and becomes really famous for it. So it's a really fascinating book. I love science too, and there's a lot of science in this book. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, for me was like a really nice hook, but I don't think you have to like science to love this book, but
I love her debut novel. Like mm-hmm. that was just like such a fun one. It was like working in finance and like yoga. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine like her second novel just take it a different level. So
yeah. Okay. And so that's funny that you say that, because I didn't read her first novel, but I did read her second. And I was in conversation with her last week, and she was like, oh yeah, my first novel and my second novel are like nothing alike. They're totally different. And so now I'm like, I now want to go back and read the first one. But you know, I think some authors do that really well. Like, I don't know. I remember reading Amor Towles, reading Rules of Civility, and it's this definitely historical, but it's very like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's just extremely different from A Gentleman in Moscow. Like the tone is very different. The feeling that you get from it is very different, to the point that if I hadn't known that he wrote both of them, I wouldn't have even known. And I loved them both. Like they're two of my favorite books, but they're very, very different. And so when she was saying that, I was thinking about that. And so it's always nice when you read something that, you know, people can really write very different things. And I guess that makes sense. We're making up a lot of different people. So
mm-hmm. That's true. I think it's just like, maybe it's the writers, some writers like to take different risks in different ways. So like, you know, try something different, or the faucet of ideas come to you and there's like so many different ideas and you're like, I don't know what to do.
I know. It's so true. And like, I have a historical novel coming out in 2022. I never thought I'd write a historical novel, but I had this idea and it wouldn't let me go. And I'm really lucky that I have a publisher that was like, yeah, go for it. Write something different. We don't care. And I was like, okay, great. You don't think this is a bad idea? They're like, no. That's a great idea. And it's very on brand for me. Like, it's a historical contemporary. So you still get that contemporary viewpoint. It's, you know, these strong women and kind of how all their stories merge together over this kind of like talisman that they all have in common. So, I mean, it's very on brand for me, but it's, you know, it is historical. So it was a little bit different. But the other thing I wanted to recommend, I'm reading The Newcomer right now by Mary Kay Andrews, and it has not come out yet, but it is fantastic. I think it's her best book. Like, I love it. You see so many like reminders of her early mystery work. Like, there's definitely this big mystery unfolding at the center of the story, but it's also like just a fun summer read and has these great characters and a good love story. And it's like all the good Mary Kay things. So it's a great one. It was what I needed right now.
I feel like Mary Kay is like perfect for summer. Like, it's just like a beach read. I just want to be by the pool. Think for like a whole day, just reading her book.
I know. Well, that's her like summer begins with MKA, right? I'm like, that is such a good, I told her the other day, I was like, that's such a good tagline. I need a tagline. I got to work on that.
We can brainstorm
that. Yeah, brainstorm. So,
I love this. So tell us where you can find you online.
Okay. So my website is www.christywoodsonharvey.com with a K and a Y, Christy with a K and a Y. And then on Instagram, I am Christy W. Harvey, and then Christy Woodson Harvey on Facebook and Twitter, which is funny because you would think that I would have used Christy Woodson Harvey everywhere, but I had Instagram long before I was an author, and I didn't know that I was going to write as Christy Woodson Harvey. So Christy W. Harvey on Instagram it is.
Okay. Thank you, Christy, for being on the show.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me. This was so fun. And I love that it was my first one. Yay.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.